Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings, they're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Club and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself, because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
Hey everybody, J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce. We have a new podcast here. I know it's on the same podcast feed, but the minor league season is here. And so we now have a weekly prospect podcast that we're going to roll out. The goal is to have one of these every Wednesday. And if you said, okay, well, you talk about prospects on a lot of podcasts, we do, but this is going to be a prospect-focused, a pro-prospect-focused podcast. And the goal of it also is to get a little bit more granular, go a little bit more in the weeds than we do on a lot of them, because we're going to make sure that there's points of this where we're talking about prospects far from the top 100 in some cases. We're talking about what's going on right now, what to look forward to, and all that. Jeff, great to see you. We both sporting a little bit of tan, not much in my case, a little bit more looks like in yours, because we both just got back from spring training trips. We had basically people all around. Jeff spent almost 2 weeks in Florida. I spent almost a week in Arizona. Between us, we saw a whole lot of prospects, a whole lot of games. Good to see you. Now that we went straight from spring training into Major League, then AAA, and now we're getting ready for the rest of minor league opening day. How are you feeling as we sit here and just sit under a waterfall of baseball that will just flow over us for the next 5, 6 months?
Yeah, I think it's excited and anticipating kind of the full, schedule of baseball being active and going. Obviously not the complex leagues right away, but I think the stuff that we're most interested in at this point in the season are the double A and the A ball leagues, and just to see how players look. We'll obviously get some actual real debuts for a lot of pitchers and draftees from last year. And full season debuts for a lot of the complex standouts from the last couple of years. So I think that's always an interesting, month or so in the season. A lot of the stuff that happens, maybe we'll give you hints as to what the future holds. More often than not, though, there's a lot of noise in that first month, and we can see guys that perform really well and then really can fall off.
Or vice versa.
Exactly.
Or the Dominican kid who's never seen weather under 60, who doesn't seem to hit all that well or throw all that well when it's 35.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to see stuff like that. So, but I think, AAA is fine, but by the time prospects, I sound a little bit like Josh here, but by the time prospects get up to AAA, we're just so familiar with them, and I think have a pretty good understanding of the type of players they are, what their upside is, what their deficiencies are, what their strengths are. So, I know this is the point in the year where, it's exciting, but also I think once you reach that moment, it's like once again you get back, thrown into the fire of trying to manage. All right, how am I going to look at all my handbook teams? Who's interesting that's pitching tonight? Oh man, that wasn't listed, but that's who was going, and I missed the first inning and a half. Like just jumping around the MILB feed and, trying to see as many players as possible, but also get a feel for, each game that you're watching, which I think is always what the challenge is.
But with that, we do want to hit on kind of some of the news of the week. Speaking of AAA, there have been a couple of notable assignments. It kind of feels that notable, but the A's sent Nick Kurtz straight to AAA, which I would say that 10 year ago me would have been like, wow, he got sent to AAA. Nowadays, with Cam Smith going to the majors from last year's draft and Ryan Johnson skipping over the minors to go to the major leagues and the Angels bullpen is a little bit less of a an outlier. But at the same time, I do think it does kind of fit what we've been hearing with Nick Kurtz, which is I can't find anyone who's seen Nick Kurtz, you know, like an evaluator or a coach who doesn't come away thinking this guy's really going to hit.
Yeah, I think if you just look, you know, throughout his career as a collegiate at Wake Forest, we've had a couple, I guess like three different sort of, you know, instances of kind of isolated small sample sizes in pro ball between, you know, his post-draft debut, there was an injury. Of course, he was in AFL for a little bit, and then we got to see him in spring training. And, you know, I know obviously it wasn't public, but you folks, you know, you, Jesus, Josh, got to see him in the backfields and some performances there.
I think we all saw extra base hits because,
yeah, like, I think you're going to see that. Yeah, and I think the thing that's impressive about him too is, you know, there's always the concern of the first base only college prospect. He is a better mover and a little bit better athlete than I think people think. He's not Cody Bellinger. He's not going to play center field someday. But, you know, I don't think he's incapable of probably playing left, but he's so good at first base, there's no need to move him off of the position. And he fits the profile in terms of the bat. Natural big power that he doesn't have to sell out for. It's power to all fields. It's great plate approach. That's kind of always been maybe his strongest tool, you know, in a tool belt. And the bat's a ball ability for the type of hitter he is excellent. So I think you put all those ingredients together and it kind of blends together and makes a really good player. And I think potentially like a top 10 perennial first baseman very shortly.
I think that's a key point with this. We always get the question, why is so-and-so ranked so low? And often the answer is because if you're going to be a bat only profile player, prospect, it's really hard. And we've seen, to give just an example, we've seen guys like Nick Prado, who was just designated for assignment, recently, like that. It's like, well, you know, who was a top 100 prospect, but it's like, who was really good defensively, or at least thought to be good defensively also, but you've just really got to hit. Nick Kurtz is a really good defender at first, and he should really hit. Speaking of guys who really hit, obviously Christian Campbell has made his big league debut, made a pretty loud initial big league debut, but Roman Anthony back at AAA. And, as we're recording this, on Tuesday before Tuesday night games, but Roman Anthony has already had a 2-home run game. Jeff, I'll just kind of ask it this way. How long do you expect that you will be able to go check out Roman Anthony at Worcester?
Yeah, you know, I think this is one of those really tricky questions, right? Because the talent would dictate it could be within a couple of weeks. I think if the team
was, it could have been opening day.
Yeah, it could have been opening day, of course. But I think just the short term of like, hey, it could be 7 to 10 days kind of a thing. I don't know how realistic that is just based on the composition of that team right now. Now they haven't started out great, but they're not replacing Jarren Duran anytime soon. They're not replacing Willy Abreu, at least against right-handed pitching. He obviously isn't in the lineup against lefties. He's a platoon bat. So maybe there's opportunity there, but Anthony's also a lefty. He does hit left-handed pitching well historically, but we haven't seen that in the major leagues
yet. And you're not bringing him up just for that kind of
sure. Role. So the question becomes, do they move Zidane Raphael to more of like a super utility role, which I think quite frankly is probably his best fit, is that he can play a variety of different positions, can be a late inning replacement. The question then is, does Anthony play center field? He has extensive experience doing that in the minors. Does Duran play center field and they move Anthony over to left field as a left hand, et cetera, maybe a better fit. I don't know. Talent-wise, he should be there now. If this spiral continues over the opening weeks of the season, when I think the Red Sox organization, the fan base, the players and the team are clamoring for a good season. I think it's been a while since that's been the case, probably 2018, the last time you could say it was really a good team. I don't know. Do they call up Anthony at that point in time? I think it's an interesting question. It could be, they do sort of have this like emergency valve, you know, easy button, so to speak, of like, all right, we hit this button, you know, Anthony's here in 45 minutes. He just travels down
and the pipe. Provides excitement at some point. See, we're doing something.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. I think more than likely these things have a way of shaking out injuries, etc., and you know, the opportunity to open up a spot in the 40-man roster presents itself. They do that. They add Anthony. He gets called up and probably never goes back down again. It's interesting, you know, and I think where the reports, just to go full circle here, the reports out of spring training, Marcelo Meyer was as getting as many rave reviews as Anthony or Campbell. And I think when you, you know, obviously the early performance hasn't been the same, but that's a good sign. That's good to hear. I think it sort of speaks volumes on maybe this next core that's coming up right now. And you've brought up this point before, every time the Red Sox have been good and successful, they've sort of had this core of young players that's been driving it and they sort of build around that. So we'll see what happens. Campbell's up. You know, I would be shocked if to me, like the absolute latest date would be June 1st that I would be able to, you know, if you place bets, you probably can someplace, but I would probably bet that he's up before June 1st. You know, I guess they have the one bite at the apple with PPI with Campbell. Maybe they're not as concerned with Anthony. You know,
you could, by the way, you still could right now. If you brought him up, I believe Matt Eddy worked out, I think it's April 10th.
April 10th.
You still have this very small window where he still could come up and be PPI eligible as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the mechanics either of, you know, in terms of if there's a certain date where they can trigger certain things. I don't know. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens. He didn't have a ton of AAA time either. So
it's not crazy to have him in AAA. This is not that they're slow walking or anything like that. And that the thing you hit here, which I do think is important to note, we talk about it on our Slack channel a bit. I really believe that teams, understandably, they like to postpone decisions a lot of the time, especially when you're talking about the vet versus the rookie kind of decision. You give the reason that Ty almost always goes to the veteran is that the rookie can be option to the minors. In the case of, like, they can figure, the Red Sox can figure this out, but they're not limiting. The minute you kind of pull that, you know, you play that Anthony card, you are kind of now saying this is the route we're going. Well, look at rotations all around. There are AAA rotations to start this year are really good, in part because the tie almost always went to the guy who doesn't have options, right? Like, well, we don't know if this 32-year-old's better than, you know, that we don't know if Chris Paddock's better than Zebby Matthews. We don't know if, you know, all the pitchers the Giants brought in, Justin Verlander probably is, but the pitchers the Giants brought in are better than Carson Wisenhunt and, you know, Birdsong and Kyle Harrison. But these guys, if you don't put them in the rotation, you lose them. Whereas if you just say, hey, Kyle Harrison's going back to AAA for a little while, Carson Wisenhunt's going back to AAA for a while, okay. And then the minute there's an injury, they're ready to go, and you now may be able to have both of them. So, yeah, I think that there is kind of this natural delay. You know, where we're seeing this a lot, especially in March as it turns into April, that a lot of this will get cleared up as we get to May, June, July. And that leads us into, we're going to do our deep dive of the days into a pair of prospects that we saw in spring training. Jeff, like you said, you were in Florida, or you saw pretty much everyone on the West Coast of Florida, right? Like you saw...
Yeah,
10 teams on the West Coast.
In not some way, shape, or form. I didn't see, like, the Tampa roster, the Tampa Clearwater pods, which is the Blue Jays, the Phillies, the Tigers, and the Yankees. I pretty much saw all of their full rosters, all the pitchers, saw some of their arms a couple times, just easier to get around to those complexes, you know, where it's a little bit more spread out once you get down south. I think I saw all of the Orioles. I saw all of the Pirates and the Rays. Saw enough backfield games with those guys to get a good feel for everybody. I think I know, I saw everybody, mostly everybody of note outside of like Juan Carlos Lara for the Braves. And then obviously the guys that are, you know, in their walking wounded injury bucket. There's a few of those. Red Sox, I saw all the guys that were in the spring breakout game. And Twins, I saw everybody that was in the spring breakout game. I didn't see Emmanuel Rodriguez, didn't see Walker Jenkins, who wasn't really active. Didn't see Prelip myself, but heard the reports, saw the video, you know, talked to Josh, of course. But I was there long enough to have a pretty good feel for, I think, just about everybody. And the spots that I missed, Josh pretty much picked up, and we were in communication constantly. So it sort of felt like, all right, I'm here. I just saw you, Savage, and, you know, Cal Steven and Eduardo Beltre or whatever. And, you know, you saw Juan Valera and Prelip and David Sandlin. You know, neither of us saw Peyton Tolley, but I knew some scouts that were there, as well as Ian from Sox Prospects, who obviously does a great job covering the Red Sox prospects and just minors in general. And, you know, he was texting me back and forth because I wanted to see Tolley, and like, we couldn't kind of figure out when he was going. And by the time he was, I was 3 hours away. So
yeah, you were a long bridge, and a long couple of bridges away from getting there.
And the bridge at that point isn't even the big deal. You still got 2 hours pretty much once you hit that bridge down to Fort Myers, you know. It's a haul.
You can hear me. You know, I wrote about this baseballamerica.com about why Arizona spring training is so much better than Florida, and the traffic and the distances are a lot of that. But one of the guys you saw that you were raving about, that you wanted to talk about, that we talked about on phone calls, like, this podcast is really – we did a version of this on a phone call last week, just talking prospects. Like, you know what? That we should probably do that on the podcast. But Connor Griffin, the Pirates first rounder last year, the shortstop, outfielder, pitcher in high school, who looks like he's now a center fielder, but he also looks like he's taken multiple steps from where he was at draft time to now, where it's like, okay, he was already premium prospect, top 100 prospect, but we're seeing signs he's taken another step, haven't we, Jeff?
Yeah, and I think there was no doubt, regardless of who you spoke with, whether it was Carlos, and obviously reviewing scout notes, which is something that, you know, our draft team does a great job of kind of compiling all that information and making sure it's readily available throughout all of our material. And, you know, kind of reviewing notes, talking to folks, you know, around the player, around teams, scouts, cross-checkers, all that sort of stuff you just do over the course of a year and a summer, especially as the Cape starts to get going and I got face-to-face time with these guys. There was a lot of skepticism around Griffin's ability to hit. There was no skepticism around the athleticism or the tools. You know, outlier was kind of the word that consistently came up when describing, you know, he could run, throw, there's power here that's, you know, maybe not actualized yet. And just as an exciting kind of player on a baseball field, which is where I think that's where tools really stand out, is that sort of excitement factor, right? Eloy De La Cruz being front and center as a prime example, or Shohei Ohtani.
Junior.
But when you watched video of the swing as an amateur, as a prep, it wasn't great. And you didn't face the highest level of competition in high school. Didn't hit a ton over the showcase circuit that summer. And I would say that the approach was a little bit more contact driven, right? We saw some videos in the off season, very early even in the off season, of a updated swing. So swing changes, some updates to his load and sort of, you know, how balanced he was. He looked way more sequenced, but there's something to take away from that. I think we see this with pitching all the time, but at the same time, there's a big difference between, you know, the marketing that are in the cage versus
I'm not reacting to anything other than I'm focused on doing this over and over.
Yeah. And you know what? It was like, okay, it looks good. This is, you know, worth take a little note of it. Let's get back.
Now will it hold up in reality when all of a sudden you're facing 95?
And we saw it in major league games. He got into major league games this spring. I mean, obviously later in major league games, but still faced guys with experience and guys that probably would have carved him up a year ago. And we saw a much better swing, much more sequence, much more stacked in terms of the back half and just how everything's moving through the ball. And he's getting to his power. Everything looks really clean and athletic. And then we saw that consistently throughout the looks on the backfields. We had a great look, Josh and I, one day, where, you know, he was really just spitting on any junk that a A-ball pitcher was throwing at him. He looked like a big leaguer in the box physically, how he moved, but also just sort of the approach that he had, the patience and, you know, just discerning balls and strikes, not panicking if he took a pitch on the outer half and then just waiting for the guy to make a mistake and attacking. And we saw that, you know, with hard hit balls, but certainly a triple that you can go and see if you go to Josh's Twitter.
Or if you're watching this on this YouTube video right now, because
yeah, runs all the way through and, you know, slides into third base, but I'm not sure he really had to. But I think that video to me kind of encapsulates, number one, the swing change and how good it looks, the power projection that's there. The ball was hit a long way in heavy Florida air. You know, that's Bradenton. We know that that's not a place where the ball typically travels heavy. And then on top, you see how well he moves. You see how well he runs, and you see how physical he is. I think under the video, somebody on Twitter might have remarked that it was like the second coming of Mike Trout. I'm not going to put that comp on him. But I think when you look at him, it is hard not to think that way in terms of like, this is that kind of physicality. How is this dude not playing football for, you know, an SEC school right now? I mean, it's that kind of an athlete. So, yeah, I think there's number one prospect, like overall upside right now with Griffin, especially if he comes out the gate and he hits.
Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings. They're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Clubs and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself. Because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
The thing that stood out, you mentioned it, like we saw multiple 30 over 30, you know, feet per second sprint speeds, which if you knew that consistently, that's 80 speed. You talked about the power, that talked about the, it's not just athleticism, but it's like, as you said, it's kind of football almost athleticism. It's that strength combination of strength, twitchiness, athleticism, power. But the other thing that you just hit on that I think was important to watch here is I always say it. It is one of my mantras. It's not a 100% perfect indicator, but teams tell you what they think about players by how they use them. The fact that he got 12 plate appearances as a 2020 in Major League Spring Training as a 2024 high school draftee who wasn't even a fully focused on hitting prospect until he was signed, like, that tells you something, because if he had have gotten a one plate appearance cameo or two, it would have been perfectly appropriate. No one would have batted an eye if it was like, yeah, Connor Griffin got into a game just to show him what it's like. But he was a high school draftee last year. We're going to wait some time for him to develop, you know, further. We'll see a lot more of him in regular season, in the minors, and we'll see him next year. No, they kept bringing him back. It was clear that the big league staff liked having him there, liked getting him into games as well. We also saw him defensively in center field, you know, the impact he can make out there. This is a guy who has a chance to have, if the hitting, when you talk about five-tool players, right? When we always talk about five-tool players, there's always the, oh, it's five-plus tools if the hit tool's there. And that's kind of the general rule, because the hit tool's the toughest to project. But we are talking about a guy here who has a well above average tools and skills, potentially, if it all clicks. So that is a fun one for Pirates fans. And again, keep an eye on if you just love prospects to see what Connor Griffin does, but the early returns were really impressive in spring training, and we expect those to kind of carry over into full season minor league ball. But Jeff, the other one out where I was, but you've also been paying a lot of attention to him, Royals first baseman Jack Caglione, we wanted to talk about, because Jack has been a fascinating prospect for years. There is zero debate. No one will ever debate. Speaking of two-way guys, I mean, this is a guy who was a weekend starter for Florida in addition to being a slugger. I would say that we've probably seen him pitch for the last time. I hope in his career that he doesn't have like a Jake Bowers career resurgence down the road, you know, where it's like, oh, the Brewers are getting shelled by the Yankees again. We're going to go Jake Bowers back-to-back days as a position player pitching. Jack's a slugger. But the thing I would say with that, that you kind of have talked about a good bit, is there's always been the concerns about the swing and miss, strikeout rate, the plate discipline. But what is it about Jack that makes you think more and more that he could just be kind of one of these outlier guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you watch him consistently, he's able to get to balls that other hitters aren't able to get to and get the barrel on it and do damage. Even just kind of like awkward swings at times, right? And there's certain guys like this that have this skill and are successful doing this throughout the minor leagues, and then it eventually kind of gets exposed once you get up to the big leagues. Miguel Andujar is one that kind of sticks out in my mind. But he's twitchier and more explosive than Andujar, and I think the bat-to-ball ability is better. And I just kind of wonder, like, how long can this plate approach, you know, if it hasn't improved? I think we need a bigger sample size in season to really know if he has taken substantial steps forward in terms of the quality of the hit tool. If he hasn't and he's still going to get by on it, I think it's probably not going to be minor league pitchers that are going to exploit that, right? It's going to be major league guys when, you know, they figure out how to spin him off the plate or whatever and get him to chase. There's going to be an adjustment for him, though, and I do think that when you look at the bats of ball ability and the power in particular are just so outlier. It's 80 power. I mean, if you had me name the 10 most powerful hitters on the planet in terms of guys that hit the ball harder than anybody, it's like Stanton, Judge, Ohtani, and Caglione not far behind. Yeah. Like, once it drops off those guys, you're kind of in the conversation with him and Wood and Anthony and those type of guys.
Let me just note, his home run in spring training, which not every home run in spring training is tracked by StatCast, but his home run in spring training that was tracked by StatCast, 115 miles an hour off the bat. We're sitting here recording this now basically a week into the major league season, and it still remains the second hardest home run hit by any in any big league spring training or regular season game this year. 115 is rarefied air. We will see guys hit balls harder than that this year. Shohei Ohtani will do it regularly. But 115, which is not going to be the hardest hit that Jack has this year, I would bet. But that is something that very few players do at all.
Yeah, almost done. It's not many guys like that, that's for sure.
So when you talk about, like, we're going to have to see, we're going to be watching this, but what is that kind of like? Okay, so let's say that he does have kind of that outlier, you know, some of those outlier skills, that ability to make hard contact on balls that other players don't, like which really is kind of the Vladimir Guerrero Sr. Approach. What would that look like? Like, because, like, what does that look like? If, again, we're not saying that we're clearly not 100% sold yet that he is. If he was, he would rank higher on our top. But we think that that's a possibility. But what would that look like if he does have that skill? What would that look like as, like, I mean, we're obviously talking 30 plus home run power. Are we talking like, okay, he's going to be like a 240, 310, you know, 510, 520, 530 guy? Is that what we're talking? Or is that selling him short? Is that selling him too?
I think it's just with hitters like that and batting average, you're due to have wild swings just in terms of luck, right? To an extent, he's going to make his own luck with how hard he hits the ball, right? But it's the type of thing where, like, he could have 275 years, you know, 280 years where things are really dropping for him. And then other years where it's more like 235, 240, and maybe it's dragged down by like a heavy, like prolonged slump. I think it's just the nature of hitters like that, where so much of their luck they sort of have to make, but they're still maybe a little bit more reliant on those balls dropping and, you know, et cetera. He hits the ball hard to all fields, though, so it's not like it's, you know, a purely like pull power profile that kind of has this sort of situation. So that will play up the batting average on balls in play, obviously, as are the EVs. But that is the tightrope that guys like that do walk, though, I think.
And again, when we go back to teams show what they think by, you know, by use, like, Jack played a lot, but he would get different. He's a college guy who played in the SEC. It's a big difference from Connor Griffin. But that said, he also, the thing that stands out is again, I don't want to oversell what spring training stats, but he did hit 500. He did walk five times and strike out four times in 23 plate appearances. He had four strikeouts and he had three homers. So obviously that is far beyond what anyone's going to produce, but it is kind of encouraging to see what he looked like. You know, a lot of times he was coming in second half of games. He wasn't facing the starters. And again, I also don't want to say, like, the thing that I would also emphasize about spring training for any of these guys is it's a big difference what you're – if you face a regular big league starting pitcher in spring training, they're not – they're working on what they're working on because these stats don't count. It's not the same thing. We will see, like, okay – what we'll see the move counter move happen with Jack in season, where it's like, okay, oh, is he struggling with sliders away? Okay, let's just feed him a steady diet of sliders away. Things like that, where you don't see that as much in spring training, but it was very encouraging to see what Jack did, you know, in spring training. And we're expecting, I think everything says this assignment will be to double A to start the year, Northwest Arkansas. And if he hits like you would expect him to hit there, I would say that that should be the first half of the season, and wouldn't shock me at all to see him in AAA by midseason if everything goes right. But, so that's kind of us talking about, those are a pair of top 100 prospects. But what we also want to do is kind of, this is going to give us a chance to riff on some non-top 100 prospects as well, that kind of are our prospect soapbox here. Where I'm going to start with a guy who really stands out to me that I got to see again in Arizona, and then I'll let Jeff do that as well. But the guy I want to talk about is Reds right-hander Luis May, who is a reliever. Okay, so that already kind of puts him, like, he is a flat-out, do not ask me if this guy's starting reliever. So that puts him in a tough prospect category right there, right? Because we always downgrade minor league relievers. And people say, well, why do you do that? It's because, for one, you're just not going to throw as many innings. For two, it is a role that, as you see the starters in the minors get converted into relievers, some of those end up being the best relievers. If you want Mason Montgomery, I think with the Rays, is a recent, current prospect who kind of fits that category of how much better a guy can get. Like, he was a pretty bad starter last year, and he's a pretty lights out reliever. I think he's going to be a pretty lights out reliever this year. But I want to talk about May because, okay, I do love velocity, but this is not your run of the mill velocity, is the thing I would say. Luis May throws sinkers. He throws two sinkers, and they're 102. They're 101, they're 102. He's touched some 103s, but I would say he sits. He's currently, like, in his first outing of the AAA season, he sat at 102. When I saw him in the spring breakout game, he sat 100 and touched 102. But let me just tell you, he's never thrown strikes until recently. His steady and control improvement is the key to this. But 100 to 102 mile an hour sinkers with real sink is a diabolical question to ask a hitter to kind of try to handle, because the key thing about this, and a stat I've used a couple of times already, but he did not allow a homer. He didn't allow a triple. He allowed six doubles in 224 plate appearances, I believe, last year. This guy is really hard to lift. And so if you said, okay, well, what does that mean? So if you're not going to get an extra base hits against him, very rarely, if you're going to get strikeouts because, and you're going to break bats, which he's going to do, all he needs to do is throw strikes. If he threw strikes, that whole idea of I'm going to score a run because I'm going to walk a guy, and then I'm going to, you know, get a ball put in play to advance him, and then I'm going to get a single to drive him in, that becomes really hard when you've got a guy throwing 102 mile an hour bowling balls. Triple A to start the year, but I would also be stunned. If a healthy Luis May continues throwing strikes like he has so far in spring training and now in the very start of the Triple A season, I can't really envision how he's not going to help the Reds bullpen at some point this year. He is on the 40 man. I know Zach Maxwell is another guy with that on that same team who also throws really hard, who's also interesting. But if you ask me of the two of those relievers, and I'll, before I get to your guy, Jeff, I'll kind of ask you this way too. I'm taking May, younger, better body, and I think it's a little bit just better stuff. But if you had to go May or Maxwell, Jeff, who would you take?
Oof. It's a good question.
Yes, I think it's the first
one. It's a little bit of the Spider-Man meme, right? Yeah. But I think I'm going May. I just think, you know, velocity is a little bit higher. Just really exciting, I think, in terms of what the upside is as a potential closer. But both of these guys are kind of there and have similar issues. But I think the way that I've heard you talk about Louis May and just the video that I've seen, I haven't seen him in person. I think I'm going to lean May here, actually.
Okay. But now it's your turn to get on the soapbox. A non-top 100 prospect that is kind of one of, you know, the guy that's fascinating to you. And you got to get this one in now because we're not going to have long to call him a prospect, it looks like.
Yeah, that's Alan Roden of the Blue Jays. Talked about him, written about him a lot over the last couple of years. And I think now people are starting to sort of see what I had written about. I kind of regret maybe not ranking him a little bit higher. And I did go a 50 high on him in the handbook. So he does have, I think, a relatively strong score for the type of prospect he is. But I think he's just indicative of some of the talent that's in the Blue Jays organization and the types of players they do well on, which are some of these kind of underrated guys with good plate skills. He happens to be one that is not positionless. I think we're seeing that the defense is pretty good. He's not going to play center, but he's a good right fielder. Could obviously fill in center field, left field in a pinch. Moves well. The bats of ball ability is really strong. He's always had great plate approach and the ability to get on base at a really, really high clip. And over the last year, he's done well to start to get his best hard contact more airborne to his pull side, which has led to a little bit of surge in terms of home run production. So I think just a really good all around player. And one just based on like four metrics and things like that, I think over the course of a full season, will probably grade pretty highly.
So let me ask you of him. I feel like with him, he had two challenges coming out of college. One was, he played at Creighton, and that is a ballpark that even in this modern, home run crazy environment of college baseball, TD Ameritrade is not somewhere where the ball really flies. So that kind of suppressed that. But the thing that you and I've talked about before, he's kind of one of those sneaky athletes, isn't he? Like, he doesn't look like he's as good at it. He doesn't make it look all that easy, I would say, is a way to put it. But how would you describe it? Like, he's a better athlete than maybe a lot of people think. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, I think it's a boxy body. So you kind of have an anticipation of how things are going to work. Has an unusual setup, which isn't as severe as it was when he was an amateur. But when he gets into his load, it sort of is normal. But yeah, I think like he's a boxy build and it looks kind of thick in the middle. So, you know, it looks more like a first baseman sort of a body. But then you get some run time, you see how explosive he is, how well he moves. But yeah, I guess, you know, there's some awkwardness maybe to the motions might be the best way to put it.
But so those are two non-top 100 prospects we're keeping an eye on this week. And so as we wrap this up, to wrap it up, so what are you looking for? You know, as we're recording this on a Tuesday, we've got the rest of full season baseball minor league opening day. Friday, I'm heading out. By the time you listen to this, I'll have already gotten back from it, but I'm heading out to see the AAA Durham Bulls in their home opener. I can't not watch Chandler Simpson if I get the opportunity, because as you probably heard on at least a couple of these podcasts, I really think Chandler Simpson's a really good hitter, in addition to the fact that he's obviously one of the fastest players in baseball and all those other things. But I really enjoy watching him hit. I see Carson Williams and all that. I haven't really looked at the schedule yet for where I'll be probably into this week, although I also know that I'll have NHSI next week, so I'll get to see Corona, which has Seth Fernandez, which could have three first-round picks on one high school team, which is crazy. I don't know if they're going to get three. We'll see if Brady Ebel, you know, makes it in. You know, but I think it's, again, fascinating team next week. But what are you keeping an eye on the rest of the week?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to be digging into the best pitching staffs out there, kind of getting an idea for, you know, who I want to be watching.
I sneak peek, if anyone beats Birmingham, it'll be really impressive.
It's going to be hard to beat Birmingham, you know, obviously with Smith and Schultz, and then Grant Taylor, who in his own right has some of the best stuff.
Who has better stuff than either of the other two?
Potentially, yeah. I think you might be able to say that. Certainly a deeper pitch arsenal. It's a very deep arsenal of pitches and shapes. But it's a matter of him throwing strikes and staying healthy. But I think I'm really looking forward to that. Obviously watching some of these AAA guys, the AAA teams early typically have a lot of guys that are going to be more notable in a month or two once they're up in the major leagues, get their call up and start to perform a little bit. But also, you know, all the young guys that are in the major leagues, we still have some guys that are ranked. You know, they're still prospect eligible. So obviously Christian Campbell and a lot of those guys, and then just, you know, different starters, maybe not top 100 prospects. You know, last night I watched this guy, Jackson Jobe, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, against Emerson Hancock from the Mariners. You see stuff like that.
You and your obscure prospects here, Jeff.
Obscure. Exactly.
Yeah. But no, there's a lot of fun to dive into, you know, and we'll be diving into it every week here on our new prospect podcast. We hope you enjoy it. If you do, please like and subscribe. If you're on YouTube, you know, please leave a favorable review, if you would, on your podcast provider of choice, because that helps other people find it. But for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.